Green Scene on the Pat Kenny Show with Repack, supporting the circular economy and reducing the impact of packaging on the environment.
Now, in the Green Scene, a trillion bacteria in every tree trunk. But first, how ants stop epidemic spread of disease in their nests and what we could learn. I'm joined by Dr. Ruth Freeman, Director of Science for Society at Research Ireland. Ruth, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
So they're clever things. We always knew ants were clever.
We do. And the more we learn about them, the cleverer they seem. And look, as we're going into cold and flu season, it's a good reminder of how we stop infection spreading. And ants are very motivated to stop infection spreading because often the infections that they get are pretty nasty. So things like funguses. And if they infect an ant, they sort of take over the body of the ant. And then it starts to fill up with spores and spread spores everywhere. So if you're a colony, you really want to make sure that doesn't happen. And we've known for some years that ants have a number of tricks to stop this happening. So they'll physically groom themselves and others to remove fungal spores if they see them. They'll actually spray each other with a disinfectant, formic acid, which will help to get rid of these kind of spores. And we know that they do practice social distancing. So even within an ant's nest, we'll see, you know, they'll make sure that there's distances physically between maybe the worker ants that are out collecting things and bringing stuff into the nest and maybe where the baby ants are being raised and the queen.
And they'll redesign their accommodation.
And this is the new finding now. So this was published in the journal Nature, and it's work from Yale. And this is really incredible. Very clever experiment. Sorry, from Bristol, not from Yale. The next one is from Yale. But this is researchers. They did a very clever experiment. They took two colonies of ants. There was 180 worker ants in each. And they essentially gave them soil to start building a nest. And they started building the nest. But then after 24 hours, they added 20 extra ants to each colony. And in one colony, those 20 ants were infected with a parasitic spore. And then they gave them 6 days to keep building their nest. But they used very clever 3D scanning technology to look at the internal structure of the nest. And what they found was pretty remarkable. So what they found was the nests dug by the ants where the fungus had been introduced were more modular. So sections were more easily able to be sort of hived off
from other areas.
They found there was longer travel distances, which is very unusual because ants are highly efficient. But of course, if you've got a spore-infected ant, you want them to have to go longer before they encounter another ant potentially. And they found that the entrances were also further apart and there was fewer direct connections inside in the hive. So they're calling this architectural immunity. And it's a really fascinating idea. That, I mean, obviously these are made out of mud and they can be adapted relatively easily. But in the course of only a few days, this colony adapted to create an environment where they could prevent the spread of a pathogen.
And the idea that ants' nests are a bit like small cities, complex things, and we could learn in the design of our cities how to limit spread.
I mean, I think cities and even our buildings, you know, when we think about buildings, are there ways to think about how we could potentially modify routes, or maybe we should be modifying routes in winter season when we have a lot of viruses and things flowing around. Now, obviously, we have a lot more airborne pathogens than physical pathogens. But nonetheless, I think there's some ideas here that we could think of, because we don't often think about sort of disease management when we think about city design.
So our hand sanitizer is their formic acid.
Exactly. So we're already doing things they
moving
do.
Moving on to an old tree trunk, and it might contain a trillion bacteria.
And this is not a sort of rotting tree trunk in the forest. This is a live tree. So I mean, way back 100 years ago, people actually thought wood and plants were sterile. But of course, over the last hundreds of years, we now know soil and the roots of trees are teeming with bacteria and fungi and even maybe form connections between them. But it's quite remarkable that we had never looked deep inside the wood. And that's partly because as soon as you cut open a tree, it becomes contaminated with things around it. So it's very difficult to know what's going on there when the tree is fully intact. So researchers here in Yale, they used a really complex technology. They froze, sort of flash froze wood, and then they took cores, which they then sliced into minute little pieces, and then were able to isolate what kinds of bacteria were in each different part of the wood. And they examined 150 trees from 60 15 different species. And what they found is pretty remarkable. So firstly, they found there's about a trillion bacteria living in your average tree. So just like, I mean, we have about 39 trillion, so they're still in the halfpenny place compared to us, but there's an awful lot in there. But what was also remarkable was that it was species specific. So different kinds of trees had different microbiomes living within them. And also the outer wood, the kind of sapwood, was very different from the heartwood deep inside the trunk. And what was fascinating about the heartwood is that it almost looked like a swamp. It's wet inside there. And you get bacteria that are producing gases like methane. And of course, that's really, really interesting, because when we think about trees, we think about them as capturing greenhouse gases. But this is potentially a whole other source of methane, which is a greenhouse gas being emitted from trees. And of course, as our trees change over time, and maybe as our temperatures get warmer and wetter, we may see trees that have more of these kind of methane bacteria inside them and fewer of the other bacteria.
But the question is this methane generated within being used to encourage growth?
Well, potentially, and it may even be being used as a source of food for the bacteria on the outer parts of the tree. And of course, this opens up fascinating possibilities. If we sequence all of these bacteria and we understand what they're doing, could we potentially modify what's going on inside a tree and make it so they are even more effective at capturing greenhouse gases and making sure that they don't end up becoming carbon emitters?
Now, you know that contention that wood is sterile. There's a belief, though, about the butcher's block that, you know, that never gets scrubbed down, really. It's used again and again, and yet no infections follow. This is the wooden block,
yes,
not the metal one. And maybe these little fellas are doing great work.
Well, who knows? And that the truth is, we don't really understand the chemistry of wood, even here in 2025. It's sort of one of those things that's been around for so long, and we've used it alongside humans for forever. And yet we're only getting to grips with what's going on inside it now.
Dr. Ruth Freeman, Director of Science for Society at Research Ireland, thank you very much.
Green Scene on the Pat Kenny Show with Repack, supporting the circular economy and reducing the impact of packaging on the environment.